welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 264 of the podcast. And it is the 8th of April as I record this, a little bit jet lagged from my trip to Austin, Texas. And as a morning person, usually it drives me nuts getting jet lagged this way because my body is still in Texas, which is 6 hours behind. I only start waking up around lunchtime in England. So I will get over it. It takes me about a week either way. So we will see. So today I have an interview with Michael LaRon. And we're talking all about YouTube and how authors can use it for marketing. And I know the thought of video freaks a lot of people out, but it is something that most authors don't do. So a way to stand out for sure. And I've had a YouTube channel for years, youtube.com/thecreativepen. And of course, the interviews from the podcast go up, but I occasionally do other videos, but I will be doing more as my husband, who's joined the company, is really getting into it. So he will be doing a lot more video. So there will be more behind the scenes. I've got a video coming this week of, we went to my dad's and filmed him doing his printmaking process, which went into making the colouring book that we did together. That'll be a video from London Book Fair. We're going to do some videos from Spain. We're heading off to Spain. Check out the YouTube channel and subscribe there if you're interested in videos. Okay. So that interview with Michael LaRon will be coming up soon, and I hope it will inspire lots of you to do some video. So the Smarter Artist Summit, which I was at in Austin, Texas. First of all, Austin itself is great. And most of you will know this, but it's not at all what most people consider Texas to be. It's kind of not very Texan. It's almost like Oregon or California in Texas. I even walked past a campaign office for Vote Bernie, which I thought was fascinating, given the political situation in America right now. But if you're interested in my photos, and I took lots of, a lot of the street signs and street art, what we used to call graffiti is now street art. And I'll link to that, link to my Flickr account in the show notes. And I also shared those on Facebook and Twitter and all that. At the summit, I met loads of people who I've only met online before, and that was amazing. I met Johnny, Sean and Dave from the self-publishing podcast, who I've known online for years. I even knew Sean and Johnny before they were the self-publishing podcast. And so it was kind of crazy good to meet them, and a whole load of people that I met for the first time, like Lindsay Barocca, who is super, Dan Wood from Drafter Digital, Damon from Book Funnel was hilarious. And I also caught up with lots of people I know, like Mark Lefebvre, Brian and Jim from the Sell More Book Show. And the Sell More Book Show actually recorded a live podcast from Austin, and it was only the second night I was there, so I was jet lagged in the other direction, which means it was about 9 p.m. Austin, and my body felt like it was about 3 a.m. and I'd had a margarita, so I think I actually booed Jim over something. I think it was a comment around quality if you write fast. But so if you listen to that live Sell More Book Show, you will hear me heckling. What else? Yes. So I also met a load of you. So thank you so much for all the listeners who were in Austin, Texas. And thank you for coming up. And some of the Patreon supporters got their hugs, which was lovely. And lots of you came to say hi and took pictures with me. And I really super appreciate it. And if you didn't say hi, don't worry. I was up in the introvert space quite a lot because I needed to rejuvenate. I think many of us do. I'm really, really tired after that event, but it was well worth going. There was one point when Mark Lefebvre was speaking and he actually asked who listens to the show, and it was about 2/3 of the audience. So maybe about 120 people in the room who were listening to the show. So thank you, all of you. Thank you to everyone, but it was wonderful to meet some of you in Austin. So some of the specific sessions I enjoyed. Mark Lefebvre talked about the resurgence of thrillers overtaking romance on Kobo sometimes. And his quote was, "It's not all romance all the time," which is good to hear because I know many of us feel that it does look like romance all the time, but it's not necessarily, which is super. I mentioned the recharge area for introverts. Now, this was brilliant. Basically, there was an upstairs space where you could look out over the conference, but up there it was no talking and it was kind of a space where people wouldn't bother you. And that was well used, actually. And this is a great recommendation for those of you involved in conferences. If you're helping people organize conferences, having an introvert recharge area is a great idea because usually introverts end up in the toilets. In between breaks, you know, just to get away from intense people time. I also enjoyed listening to romance author J.A. Huss, Julie Huss, who talked about her use of Facebook groups for her fans. She basically said that a reader wants the book, but a fan wants the author, and a fan will buy your latest book at full price, which is fantastic. Julie also does a lot of giveaways and creates her own merchandise with a site called Society 6. So that's society and then the number 6.com, which looks brilliant and something I really, really want to do. And Julie is pretty amazing and her use of Facebook is incredible, but it made me think about how I use Facebook. And to be honest, I pretty much don't use it as much as many people, but more than others, I suppose. But you know, she talked about sharing your vulnerabilities with readers. Now, I don't do that on Facebook, but I do that with you on the podcast. So I think we all just have to find our own ways to, you know, choose what works for you and what works for your personality and what is sustainable for the long term. We can't all do everything. And I am thinking a lot about this at the moment. Yes. Okay. Next thing. Sean Platt said, and this was a good quote, "Never be afraid to alienate the wrong reader." And I think that's important too, because you can't be all things to all people. So when you get one star reviews, like, you just have to take the punches and roll with them and all that, because some people won't like your books. And, you know, I could read all of your books. You know, I might really like you personally, but I might really not like your book. That's completely normal. And that's why our friends are often not the people who will buy our fiction. In particular, as well as nonfiction, because we all like different things. You know, again, like my husband, who loves me dearly, he likes reading long fantasy books, not the type of books I write, short thrillers. So, you know, we can't all read everything. What else? James Tonn from Podium Publishing, and they did The Martian audiobook. So originally, if you don't know, that was blogged and then made into a Kindle book, and then it got made into an audiobook, and then that won awards, and then it got a film deal, and then Andy Weir got the book deal. So it basically, the audiobook was the thing that helped it break out. And James talked about making audio credit worthy. And it was really, you know, the penny dropped for me, I think, around Audible, because it's not a meritocracy, and it's, you can't actually even try and game the system like Kindle. You know, you can't do a run on the audiobook store, for example. It's curated. It's very highly curated, and it's a membership model. So I'm an Audible member now, and I get one credit a month, and I totally got it when James said it's got to be credit worthy, because if I only get one, and I say free, it's not free, you're paying a membership fee. But if you get one a month and it's worth, say, £7.99, which is about $10, you kind of feel like you want something that's going to give you good value for money. So, for example, I've downloaded so far, you know, a sort of 26-hour lecture series on the apocalypse, because I like the lighthearted listen. But, you know, that's the type of thing I'm listening to, not a short audiobook of 4 or 5 hours, unless it's nonfiction, to be honest. I'll listen to a nonfiction for 4 or 5 hours, like a self-help. But I think for a story, James mentioned that people like sort of 8 to 12 hours, or even more. So consider what is credit worthy when you're doing audio. The other interesting thing was around some statistics. James said less than 50% of listeners are driving while listening. And also, digital is 79% of the audiobook market. So those two things are, you know, underscore the shift to smartphone listening. I'm sure some of you are driving while listening because I hear from you and you are, but many of you are not. So the shift to smartphones means that people are listening digitally, but also they're listening while doing other things. So as the penetration of smartphones increases, we're going to see further penetration of audio through podcasting and audiobooks. So also, Andre Chaperon spoke. He does the Autoresponder Madness course, which is fantastic. And he talked about email as a differentiator, especially as an introvert. And Andre is a fellow introvert, you know, very quiet man, considered man, not shy, but introverted. And email can be the thing that separates you from the crowd and is especially underused by fiction authors again. But reflecting on both Julie and Andre, I mean, you couldn't have gotten two more different people. And yet they both talked about looking at what differentiates you and how you stand out. So, you know, Julie's kind of outspoken and, you know, sort of jolly and loud and funny and sort of telling naughty jokes, things like that. And I'm going to have her on the podcast. And Andre, you know, is sort of quiet and, you know, very, very happy with communicating via email rather than talking to people, and certainly not someone to share personal stuff on Facebook. So I think, you know, considering thinking about what can differentiate you, what really fits with you, is super important. I spoke on the future of publishing, and I prepared a completely new talk for that. So I will be recording it at some point. Nick Stevenson talked about email lists. There were some other talks. Obviously, Johnny, Sean and Dave did some talking. I also attended a mastermind while I was out there. So basically, a lot happened. I have literally a whole Moleskine notebook full of notes that I need to go through. And but one of the things I did do, because I was away, gave me time to have a think about things. I read a great book called The One Thing by Gary Keller. It's funny because I've heard about this book for ages and I always thought, oh, it's really obvious. It's an obvious book, so I'm not going to read it. But actually, it's a very, very good book. So The One Thing. And the other book I read was Less Doing. And there is a podcast called Less Doing as well. And of course, it's not about less creation of books, for example. We all need to do more of that. It's less other things. And also The One Thing is about focusing on the most important things. So I'm really looking at ways to streamline my time, for example, around doing the podcast, around videos, around trying to serve you as an audience and trying to keep doing the things I promise to do, but also spend more time on creating my own stuff. Because just to be honest with you, I've struggled over the last 6 weeks. You know, I had a really good productive period when I wrote Destroyer of Worlds earlier, you know, in January, February. And then basically, I don't know what's happened, but I've been so busy doing other things that I just haven't got the words done. So I really need to refocus. And I say that, but next week is London Book Fair. So my diary next week is complete hell. I mean, literally is back to back. Now, again, I love that. And this is the thing. It's super important for us to fulfill the promises we make. And London Book Fair is a time when I learn a lot of things. I'm part of the Indie Author Fringe. I'm part of the rights, it's kind of the rights fair. My agent is taking a whole load of indie books to the rights fair. So it could be really exciting. And again, there will be a video about it. But, you know, when I look at my diary, it's very important that I schedule some downtime after I have so much face time. So hopefully all these things are giving you a few ideas for your life and your business and how you do your writing. So just a reminder about the Indie Author Fringe, it's at indieauthorfringe.com and it's run by the Alliance of Indie Authors and, sorry, the Alliance of Independent Authors. And there's a ton of really interesting sessions. So check that out, plus lots of giveaways. So yes, in terms of my personal writing, as I mentioned, I haven't been doing so much, but I have been doing the edits and things on Destroyer of Worlds. And yesterday I have finally published the, as in loaded the final files for the pre-order. So 21st of April, the book will be available in ebook and print. And the audiobook will be in the summer. The tagline is, an ancient weapon threatens the heart of India. And if you like some international travel in your thrillers, check it out. I'm very pleased with it. I've been wanting to write a thriller set in India for a long time. So there's quite a lot of my own sort of experiences in the book. Clearly not the killing stuff, but lots of fun. So Destroyer of Worlds out on all stores in the next couple of weeks. I'm also going to start researching End of Days, which is the ninth book in the Arcane series. And there may even be a trip to Israel for that research. We shall see. End of Days, I'm thinking we'll finish the Arcane cycle. I'm going to call it a cycle because I don't want to say it finishes the series. It will finish the cycle of story that I've kind of had in my head for a long time. And then I'm going to be looking at other things. So I think this is the thing. It's trying, when you compartmentalize your mind and you're doing all these different things, it can be kind of crazy. I'm also still wrestling with the author mindset book, which again is taking a lot of wrestling in my head. Obviously there will be a section on overwhelm. Okay. So there've been a ton of emails and comments and tweets about the last couple of weeks' shows. The interview with Michael Brent was another popular one, and I'll certainly have him back next year, I think, because there were so many emails and comments. One example, Erica Lindquist said, just listen to the interview with Michael Brent Collings. I freaked out a lot of people at the store, laughing my ass off. Loved it. Super. Glad you enjoyed it, Erica. Some other comments, and I won't be able to read them all because there were so many because it's been a couple of weeks. Elaine Griffith says, I love listening to you while making juggling props at work and getting cartoon ideas from my blog. That's an unusual one. Don't think we've had anyone else making juggling props. Very cool. Emily Goff, listening on my daily walk, which includes many bush turkeys, sent me a picture of a bush turkey from Brisbane. And I had to share that because I lived in Brisbane and the bush turkeys are hilarious. We have one amusing experience. Our cat once tried to attack a bush turkey, lost the fight, and basically ignored their presence from that day forwards. And bush turkeys, very funny. Matt O'Connor says, a week off ill, watching Time Team, listening to the podcast and reading Stone of Fire, which has me ready to create. Fantastic. Thanks, Matt, and hope you get better. Maya Carolsfeld says, listening to the backlist while on a walk in Victoria, BC. I think that's British Columbia. Lovely picture of a dog next to a field with the dawn. Really beautiful picture. Thank you, Maya. Jimmy McRobert said, listening to an older podcast and storyboarded my novel. Thank you for being an inspiration. Sent me a picture of index cards for storyboarding, which was fantastic. Barbara sent me a picture of her pre-yoga jog, 2.81 miles. Fantastic. And finally, Matthew says, I spent my day yesterday binge listening to the last four episodes while running a lawn aerator in northeast Nebraska. That's another cool thing. The introvert episode was fantastic. As an extrovert married to an introvert, it gave me some great advice on interacting with my wife and finding middle ground. Super, Matthew. Thank you so much for that. Okay, so apologies if I didn't read your comment or tweet out. I do love getting them, and I'll, you know, keep choosing some for the show. So keep sending them. And I like them all, and follow back on Twitter at The Creative Pen. So today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll share a message from our sponsor in a minute. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon, and especially to new patron Lisa M. Lilly. And I really do appreciate the Patreon support. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. You can go to Patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen if you want to support the show with even a dollar. And also, it reminds me that I will be recording the extra Q&A for Patreon supporters only next week. So if you have questions for me and you are a Patreon supporter, you can go and add them on the special page, which you have the link for, or message me to get that link. Okay, so here's a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get into the interview.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations for Kobo. What is Kobo? Kobo is a global ebook company. Born out of Canada, Kobo is available in 190 countries around the world. Now, authors like Joanna Penn already are taking full advantage of the fact that while there may be certain players, world's longest river, that exist and are quite prominent in a few nations, Kobo is available and continuing to expand and grow in territories around the world. And one of the wonderful things about being a Kobo Writing Life author is when you look at that dashboard and you see that you sold a book in some country that you probably haven't heard of before. Check us out at KoboWritingLife.com. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com. And today I'm here with Michael Laron. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Joanna.
Oh, it's lovely to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Michael is a best-selling science fiction and fantasy author, and he's also a YouTuber at the Author Level Up channel, which is awesome. So, Michael, just start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background.
Sure. Well, first off, thanks for having me on the show. It's amazing to be here. I've been a listener of your show for every week for 4 years, so it's awesome to be here.
It's great to have you.
Yeah, well, I've always been a writer. It's kind of a cliche answer, but my writing career as I know it actually started in 2012. My wife and I were out for a nice dinner, and I fell ill that night with what I thought was food poisoning, and I went to the hospital. And turns out I was there for a month. And while I was there, the doctors found a really rare infection that actually was killing people. And in retrospect, I actually could have died. And when you're in a hospital bed, when you are, you know, staring at the wall and on painkillers for an entire month, you really start to rethink your life. And I swore at that moment on that hospital bed that I would become a writer, that I would learn whatever it was I needed to learn to do it. I would talk to whoever I needed to talk to learn it. And I just made an effort to do it. And when I got out of the hospital, right around that time is when I found the Creative Pen.
For the first time. I'm thrilled.
No, seriously. And you completely opened my eyes to self-publishing, and it showed me a really clear path for what I needed to do. So I published my first book in 2014. Fast forward to today, I have over 20 books to my name, and I have a YouTube channel called Author Level Up, as you mentioned in your intro, where I do business videos every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday that teach authors the advice that I wish that I'd had when I first started off.
So I'm sure people are now wondering, first book 2014 and you've got 20 books. How do you do that?
I write really fast and I learn dictation as well. So I dictate a lot of my books now. So I am on the dictation bandwagon. I've done some videos on that. But really, I've kind of cut everything else out of my life. Writing and reading is really the only thing that I do. So I'm just really hyper focused. So I just love to write books.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I know that the Author Level Up and that side of your business is just starting, really. But the fiction side is, you know, fantastic. But I know, as someone who has split my business into two, you know, as you're doing, it is difficult. I mean, but when you don't focus on one thing, you're inevitably going to slide on the other. But given that you have 20 fiction books, right?
It's a mix between fiction and nonfiction, but it's mostly fiction.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's amazing. Well, fantastic. Okay, so today we're going to talk more about YouTube. And I was just saying before we started, for everyone else's benefit, I asked Michael if he's a millennial, which you are, right?
Yes.
Because I'm in my 40s. And those of us who are, you know, basically not as digital native. I mean, I consider myself pretty digital native these days. I think I'm a closet millennial, really. But I think YouTube in particular, to me, is a platform that's kind of come of age to that generation, your generation, essentially. So first of all, why YouTube? What is so important about YouTube?
Yeah, YouTube is fantastic. And what I love about YouTube and what a lot of people forget about YouTube is that it's a social media network. And it's the only social media network that is also a search engine, just by virtue of being owned by Google. It's the second largest search engine in the world. Everyone knows YouTube. Everyone probably has watched a YouTube video within the last week. So it's the instant name recognition. There are tons of people on there who are looking for great content, and tons of people that you can bring onto the platform who are already familiar with it. So, and YouTube is also interesting because it gives you some really interesting analytics about your viewers. In fact, I actually know more about my viewers than I know about my readers, which is kind of funny. But YouTube just tells you everything, and you really get a good sense of who the people are who are watching your video, what their needs are, and what potential solutions you can come up to help them. So that's what makes it very unique.
So that's really interesting. And I've had a YouTube channel for, I think 5 years now. And I've just been putting videos up. I barely do anything else with it. So I have a few follow-up questions on that. So one, what their needs are. And anyway, I agree on the demographics. You can tell a lot more about YouTube than you can about your readers. But you said you can tell what their needs are. So how do you get that information out?
Sure. Well, YouTube can tell you what people are searching for. So one of the analytic data points is the people that are coming on to your videos and what search terms they're using. And that's really unique because I don't know of any other place where you can do that, where you can look at what someone searched for, how to dictate your book. And YouTube will tell me that my video popped up and that video is bringing 20% of the traffic to my channel. So it's a really good way to do that. And there's a plugin called TubeBuddy for YouTube that basically it does a lot of things. But one of the things it does really well is you can put in keywords to YouTube and it will tell you how it thinks they're going to perform in real time. So it's a great way to discover what people are searching for, and you can make videos that will pop up in search.
That's fantastic. And of course, if people don't know, YouTube is owned by Google.
Exactly.
Yeah, which means the whole SEO thing is a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to get much, much better results with SEO and video optimization on YouTube than you would in another network.
Fantastic. And then you also mentioned that it's both social media as well as search engine. So I mean, and again, I don't massively use YouTube. I'm not a very video person. I'm more a podcast person or a reader.
Right. But
the social media side of it is what I find so difficult as someone who has a channel. So you're talking there about the comments. Now, it used to be that there were a lot of comment issues. What's the situation at the moment with comments on YouTube, and how should we be using them?
The way I use the comments is when people reply to the videos, I use those to start conversations. I do get a fair amount of comments on my videos, and that's just a great way to know that people are watching your video and are engaged. There were some problems a couple of years ago when YouTube kind of became Google Plus and Google Plus became YouTube, and that was a big uproar. But most of that is gone now, and comments are just a great way, just like on a blog post. People respond to the video and how much they like it, and the great part is that people actually start to have conversations with the comments, and you can join in on that and monitor that.
I'm useless about monitoring or joining in.
Oh, you have a huge audience, so it's a matter of time for you.
Yeah, it's funny. And I think it's also where you choose to interact anyway. So I like interacting on Twitter, and we can't all do everything, right? So right. I do also want to, so you mentioned TubeBuddy there. Do you have any other kind of tips for add-ons to YouTube or things that will help people kind of make the most of it?
Yeah, TubeBuddy is a great extension. It's free, and there are features that are paid that you can purchase. But another good tool is called Social Blade, and that really, it's like a YouTube report card. So you put your YouTube channel in, or you can put someone else's YouTube channel in, and Social Blade has all these different analytics that it connects with Google, and it'll give you a score of how it thinks that your channel is performing and give you some tips on what it thinks you can do to improve your channel. And it'll tell you where, you know, how many subscribers it thinks you're going to pick up at your current pace. And yeah, it's a good tool that gives you more data than YouTube gives you as well. So that's another one I would recommend for those people that have YouTube channels or who are thinking about starting one.
That's fantastic. Okay, so let's talk about the channel, because I have one channel. So, you know, The Creative Pen is my channel. And basically, I split my logo into two. So I do stuff that is The Creative Pen stuff. So like you're doing on Author Level Up, I have stuff. Well, this video, it will be on YouTube. But I also put things like my book trailers and my fiction interviews with other thriller authors on when I'm JF Pen. So they're on the same channel. Is this fundamentally a mistake? Should a channel be really focused?
Well, it depends. I think you probably do want to have two separate channels for JF Pen and Joanna Pen, simply because the audiences are so different. There is the ability on YouTube to create sub channels. So that's something that you can do as well. But in general, yeah, I have a Michael Laron channel that's for my fiction. And then I have an Author Level Up channel as well. So I divide them up, but it's just a matter of preference. It does take you more time, though, with maintenance and upkeep.
Yeah, exactly. And I have thought about it. But to be honest, I guess I have fewer ideas for fiction. So tell me, how would an author use YouTube for fiction versus nonfiction?
Yeah, that's a great question. For fiction, it's fun because it's kind of the Wild West right now. Very few people are using YouTube or video in general for fiction. So my advice for people, and I can talk about what I'm doing and my advice, would be to use fiction as a way to distinguish yourself in the marketplace. So, for example, if I asked someone today, oh, do you know a fiction author that does video? The answer would probably be no, right? Unless they know you, Joanna.
John Green. He's the person I point to.
John Green, right? And he's a well-known author, even though he doesn't do the video. Well, with fiction, I talk about this on Author Level Up. There's a spectrum of reader behavior that I talk about, and basically, when people stumble upon your Amazon page, assuming they've never heard of you before, they're looking at your book description, they're looking at your cover. It's all about the product. They care about you as an author, but they're really more interested in the story and if that's going to appeal to them. They buy the book, they read the book, they fall in love with the characters, they fall in love with the world. And then at the end, when they're reading that call to action page, that's that one moment, those couple of seconds when they're on that page, when they want to know more about you as an author, if they loved your book. And video is a great way to do that. So when they click over to the landing page on your site, why not use a video that had just a 30 seconds to a minute video that says who you are, thank them for reading, and why you wrote the book, and what they can do next, which is join your list to get a free book or some kind of a great lead magnet. And it's not so much about the video, it's about making that connection with the reader, because how many people are doing that? So you stand out by definition of making a video and taking the time to thank readers for reading your book, and they're going to remember that. And when they join your list and you send them that email announcing your next book launch, they're going to remember your face, they're going to remember what you look like, and they're going to be more likely to buy, because people buy from people that they know and trust, and it's a lot easier to trust someone and know who they are if you do a video. So that's a great way fiction writers can use video on their landing pages.
Yeah. And okay. So have you got evidence therefore of people buying fiction based on video? Because, you know, as a reader, I mean, I wouldn't know what most of the authors I read even look like, because as you say, people right. don't do videos, but then I don't go looking for them. Is that just because I'm 41?
Yeah, I'm still experimenting with video. I've actually recently done a video audit. So I've looked at every area of my business to see where I can put videos in. So the verdict's still out on the landing pages. But I do know in general that landing pages that have videos tend to convert a lot better than landing pages that do not. So the data's still out on that. But I will tell you as well that I have sold books via my Author Level Up channel just by virtue of people saying, oh, well, I kind of like what he's saying, I'll go check out his books. So I definitely do have evidence that people are buying my books, and my book sales have increased since I started Author Level Up.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I think, I mean, I if people go back and look at my first video on YouTube, it's very kind of low key and everything, but you're a low key guy as well, actually, aren't you? You've got this lovely manner, which, and I've watched a number of your videos. People don't need to be to fake things, do they? They can just be themselves. Is that kind of the number one rule?
Oh, absolutely. Authenticity is key. What I found is that, yeah, I am a very quiet person. I found that whoever you are in real life translates on video. So the moment you try to start being someone that you're not, people are going to know about it and they're not going to watch your channel. So yeah, just be yourself. It doesn't have to be an expensive, you know, high-end production that you do for video, for fiction writers, or even for nonfiction writers. Just be yourself, get on camera, make sure that you're making eye contact with the camera, and make sure that people can see your eyes, because if they can see your eyes, then that's really the only thing that matters.
Mm. And yeah, and if people go and watch your video, your professional videos on your channel, they'll see that, for both of us, we're on a Skype call, that it's not production values, but go check out Michael's other videos, which are much more pro. Okay, so I also wanted to ask about, you know, so the I don't like my face, I don't like my voice fear, that's probably the number one issue, isn't it? How do you get over that?
Sure. I still have problems with that, to be honest with you.
Oh, we all do.
Oh, absolutely. But there is a number of things that you can do to get yourself more comfortable with video. And I've got a little checklist that I can go through here. So first thing you can do is just take the leap. But if you make your background look better, by definition, you look better as well. So lighting is really important. So I imagine most people listening to the show are recording in a room that has a window. Daylight always trumps any kind of other light. If you can get daylight in your room, as long as you don't look like a ghost, you know, you don't wash your face out, it's going to look much better than, you know, the lighting above your head. So that's one thing you can do. And it's a trick called 3-point lighting as well, if you don't have that. And I can talk about that in a second. So make sure your background looks good. Like your background right now, Joanna, it looks awesome. You've got a bookcase, looks like some interesting books behind you. And that's another thing you can do is make your background minimal and spare. So plants always look good in a background. Bookcases always look good. A thing I've seen people do is they've got string lights where they'll, you know, hang lights on a bed or, you know, across a shelf. That always looks good and gives you some extra lighting. So those are the first two things that I would do to make your background look good. Once you've got your background looking good, that's when you can start focusing on your person. So the first thing you can control are your clothes. So I recommend plain clothes that aren't any crazy colors, because what I found on the camera is that you have a shirt that can look really good in person. It just doesn't look so good on camera. So the camera tends to make, at least smartphone cameras, tend to make the bright videos really bright and the dark colors really dark. So stick to something plain, solid colors for the gentleman. Ladies, wear your favorite blouse. You know, just make sure you test it on the video so that it doesn't look weird, so you don't have any weird surprises.
Yeah, and the next thing, before you go on, I gave you a lot there. Yeah, I interviewed a guy who wore I think it was a stripy shirt or something. And when we were talking, I didn't even notice. And then the video just makes me feel sick. It's like it almost moves. The stripes almost move in the video. And it was like, seriously, that is terrible. So yeah.
And you would never know.
Yeah, you'd never know. So even though people might think, oh, well, you know, that's a bit prescriptive, it's true. So very important. Yeah. So carry on with your checklist.
Yeah, definitely. I like to wear ties in my videos, but I have to be careful because they look great in person. But sometimes some of my ties just, you know, they're like psychedelic shows when the camera starts rolling. But once you've got your clothes, then that's when you can focus on your skin. And for me, I have a set of unique problems being a person of color in that my skin is naturally very oily. So that was always a really big concern that stopped me from doing video for a long time. So one of the things that I do, and I'll make a confession on the creative pen, and I've kind of alluded to it on my videos a little bit, but I wear makeup. Mm-hmm. And that gives me a very even skin tone. It makes my skin a little bit warmer. Mm-hmm. That replaces a lot of the warmth that the camera might take away. And it gives my face a very matted look, so you don't see the sweat. I'm actually wearing makeup right now, and it's just a good thing to be able to do. It's quick to put on, and it just makes you look more professional as well. And you'd be surprised what a huge difference that makes combined with your background, combined with the lighting, combined with, you know, tasteful clothes choices. You'll look great. And then the last thing that I always talk about is just make sure your eyes look good. Make sure that the camera is level with your eyes. Make sure you're looking directly into the camera so that the viewers feel that you're looking directly at them. Mm-hmm. That builds rapport. And if they can see your eyes, then everything's good.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm glad you mentioned the makeup for men as well, because
absolutely,
at the beginning, I never was much of a person who wore makeup in general until I started doing YouTube. And then I realized, because it doesn't bother me just, you know, out doing stuff. But when I saw what I looked like on video without some makeup, it's amazing how it does amplify any issues. And I'd wondered whether men had this. I mean, obviously you're not wearing as much makeup as I am, like you wouldn't, you know, but some kind of matte something on your face. And so that's really interesting. And then I have a more practical question. If men are looking for the kind of makeup that they would wear, is there like a special place where men shop for makeup, or is it online, or how did you do that? Or did you just go to a shop and brazen it out?
I relied on my wonderful wife. We went to the store and she helped me pick everything out, and I totally would not have been able to do it without her. So, gentlemen out there, talk to your wives, your significant others,
or your mom or your aunt
or someone who knows the makeup. I was amazed at how easy it is to put on and how easy it is to select. Mm. The key is just really picking the right product and finding the right skin tone. After that, it's really just a matter of putting it on.
Oh, that's brilliant. I love this. You didn't expect to be talking so much about that, did you?
Exactly. That's probably a first on the Creative Pen, talking about makeup, right?
With a guy, or in general, yes. But what's interesting about that as well is you have to learn to adapt to the medium you're using, don't you? So, for example, we're both using microphones rather than just a headset. So sometimes I interview people and they don't have any kind of audio setup. But what is the technology that you use to create and edit your videos? And of course, if you have a more basic version for people getting started, that would be great too.
Yeah, you bet. My setup is actually very basic. I shoot all of my videos on my iPhone. So that is probably already in most people's pockets who are listening to this if you have a smartphone. I use an app that I don't use the main iPhone app because it's just doesn't have a lot of functionality, but there are a lot of apps out there that give you control over your focus, control over your white balance, and control over the exposure. And you can play with those, and those will help you create more professional apps. I use the Pro Camera Plus app, just if you're interested, mm-hmm. for the iPhone. It's like $2, but they're a dime a dozen. You can find them anywhere. And I use a tripod. Mm-hmm. So I have a tripod that's specifically designed for smartphones. And that was about $20, really easy to find on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And it has a level on it. So that's pretty helpful. For my videos, I kind of have like the Apple commercial look. I've got a white background behind me. Not everyone has to do that, but if you're interested in that, you can buy a lighting kit. And that comes with a background, it comes with a couple of different screens, and it comes with studio lights, which is what I use. I have about 5 or 6 lights that shine on me while I'm doing the videos. And I have a bunch of storage bins, and I put my laptop on top of that, and I use that as a teleprompter. So it's the poor man's teleprompter. And for sound quality, this is another big takeaway, is that your phone sound quality, it's not going to be very good. If you're using a camera, you probably don't want to use the defaults on there. What I use is a lapel mic, mm-hmm. and you can get those on Amazon. I use the one I use, you can get for under $100. I recommend the Rode SmartLav Plus.
Yeah,
and that just goes right on. Yeah, it's a fantastic mic, and it's under $100. It goes right on your shirt, and it picks up what you're saying, and it gives you much, much better sound quality than what you would get on your smartphone's microphone or, you know, your standard microphone on a camera.
Mm.
Sorry,
I was going to say, so do you plug the lav mic into your phone, or do you record the sound separately and edit it together?
It goes directly into my phone. So when I import it into my computer, everything's right there together, which is really helpful. So you don't have to sync them all together.
Mm. And what do you edit on?
I use ScreenFlow. Mm. And that's another very cost-effective program. It's under $100. And I use it on the Mac. If you're on Windows, then I would recommend Camtasia. That seems to be the go-to product that Windows users use. But ScreenFlow, it's very basic software. It lets you bring in video. It lets you edit everything, cut everything together. You can put music under your videos. You can do color correction. So you can change kind of your skin tone if you need to do that. And it has the benefit of being a screen capture software as well. So I do a lot of product demonstration videos. So I'll show you how a program works or how an app works, and it will capture your screen and give you high definition video as well. So, and then I have my Blue Yeti microphone that I use for podcasting that I'll use for those product demonstration videos as well. So it's a very basic setup, and all of those things you can grab on Amazon for prices that might surprise you.
Yeah. And I think even if you're just starting out, like, again, if people go and have a look, my early videos, I mean, I did, and in fact, the first podcast I did, I say, you know, I've mentioned it before, but I basically phoned someone up on a landline, put it on speakerphone, and then held a recorder next to the phone. So you can start anyhow, you know, like you could just hold up your phone. If you hold your phone close enough, it will pick up the sound enough to get started. So I think, yeah, where you are is a little bit further ahead of a lot of people. But don't, for people listening, don't let that put you off. Like, you can just get started with a, you know, just hold your phone up, can't you, really?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I give an example of my setup because I haven't really talked about it. I'm sure people are curious, but yeah, you don't need all the stuff that I mentioned. I mean, you can just use your smartphone and see how that goes if you wanted to start a YouTube channel. And as you scale, you can start to add on different products. But yeah, it doesn't have to be an expensive venture to get started with video. Anyone can do it and you can start today.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, so I use ScreenFlow as well, and I use it for all my kind of tutorial videos as you do. You can record Keynote, and I've used it for editing, and it's actually really simple. Like, you just need an I for an in and then an O for an out, and that's pretty much all I use. So again, if people are feeling a bit technophobic, it's really not hard. You can also get apps, can't you? You can for the phone. Yeah. Like, you can do really simple editing on your phone if people don't even want to do too much.
Right. And YouTube actually has a video editor on their app that you can use, at least on the iPhone version, that you can edit your videos right there from the phone. So
that's a good point. And you can actually record directly from YouTube, can't you? So if we were, you could go onto YouTube now and just press record. You don't have to use any other software.
Exactly. So it's never been easier to get an app to use video. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the free solutions as well. On Windows, there's Windows Movie Maker. You know, it's very simple, but it gets the job done. And on Apple, there's iMovie as well. And all of those can help you put together videos that look professional.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, so let's just go back to what type of videos, because for fiction, a lot of people assume that a book trailer is a good idea. Now, I have made my own book trailers. I've paid for professional book trailers. I still, like, I love them. I think they look great, but I really don't know whether they're actually useful, and they can be expensive. So what is your thought on book trailers?
I'll say this about book trailers. I think they look awesome too. And I think most people, when they think of book trailers, they have that classical image of actors acting out scenes from a novel, or, you know, really fancy, high production. But really, I think the most effective examples I have seen of book trailers are those that are tied to a paid marketing campaign. So Mark Dawson is the first person that comes to mind who does this fantastically with his fiction series. He's got a Facebook video where it has graphics that his designer used, like a really nice background that kind of matches the background of his novel, some text that kind of teases your interest in the book, some more text that teases the interest in your book. Boom, there's the cover. And then boom, there's the call to action that tells you where to go get it next. I think that is probably the most effective way you can think about doing a book trailer, because you can monetize it and you can get a return. And if you can at least get those people onto your list, then it has a benefit rather than just, you know, putting it up on YouTube. So that is how I would use a book trailer if I were thinking about doing it. And it's also a lot more cost effective as well to do something like that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, mine, because of the types of books I write too, I think because of Facebook's hardcore content guidelines, mine are under the disturbing images, and I can't actually use them on Facebook. But what you made me think there is, how do people hire people to do video? Do you have any sites that you'd recommend? Like, if people go, oh, I want a video like that, where would you go to hire someone?
Yeah, you can go the same place you would go hire an editor. or a cover designer, a place I would probably recommend would be Upwork, formerly known as Elance and Odesk. That's a good place to potentially find some good video talent. There is People Per Hour. That's another site that I've heard people talk about. All you really have to do is look on a site where there are freelancers, and it's usually not that hard to find a video editor. And you can usually find them at pretty reasonable rates as well.
The other thing I was thinking, like when you were saying before about doing some kind of fiction call to action, I hired a professional photographer who met me in Oxford where I set some of my books. And presumably one could hire a student who's doing film to come and actually film you in person, especially if you have good backgrounds to do with your books. You know, would you recommend that too?
Yeah, that would be a great way to do it. And you're kind of doing two things at the same time. You're getting professional photography for yourself, which is something that I always recommend that you do at least every couple of years. Mm. So it's just another charge to have them shoot some video of you with backgrounds. I think that's a great idea.
I'm really thinking about that, especially because it's actually very easy to do video for nonfiction, isn't it? Like you say, you just figure out your keywords, which anyone can pretty much do. And if you're useful, it's very easy to come up with a ton of questions you can just answer on video. But for fiction, it's very difficult, especially when you're so close to your own book to do that. What I was going to ask you is about research videos. So I have done some research videos about the research behind my books. Do you think that's something useful for fiction, or are people just not looking for that kind of thing?
I think if they're already in your gravitational field, I would think about using video as a way to augment what they've already read. So I think that's a great idea, doing the research videos. Something I've done as well is video commentary. So, you know, I'll talk about what inspired the story, why I wrote this, and you know, other things that they may not have picked up on when they were reading the book. So for nonfiction, you know, people are thinking about discoverability. How am I going to get discovered? How am I going to solve a problem? I think fiction writers need to be thinking about it a little bit differently, in how can I further the connection and the relationship that I already have with my audience and make that connection deeper?
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, I'm now thinking, well, I could put out a little video as part of my monthly newsletter, you know, just because I always give a personal update, and I'm now sharing personal photos. I'm trying to make it more personal, but I could do a little video. And like you say, it's more about people knowing and liking and trusting you and giving a book a go.
Exactly. And people listen to you every week. They would love to see a video of you talking about something that's not on the show. So, yeah, that would be an interesting idea to experiment with. You might be surprised at what happens.
Yeah, and it's a whole to-do list thing, isn't it, really? It's like, at the end of the day, shouldn't we rather
There's
be
a
writing?
Million things, a million things you can do, and a million places you can put video. Yeah, that's the beauty of being a writer, but it's also the burden too, right?
It is. But I think what interests me about the fiction side with video is what you said right at the beginning, which is so few people are doing it. And it's very hard to stand out in a crowded market. But where there's some white space, like where there's a gap, that could be the place to focus. It is difficult. I would say to people that, you know, certainly my fiction persona is not something I'm comfortable with doing videos on, whereas you and I are just being who we are, you know, right now. So it is very difficult. Anyway, thinking about it, coming back to the practical side, video length. Now, the original kind of thing was videos should be short, and your videos are generally pretty short. But now there's long form video happening, and, you know, tutorials and all kinds of things. What are your thoughts on video length?
Yeah, I have a lot of interesting data on that. What I have found, and I think this is true of most YouTubers, and they would probably tell you something similar, is that the optimum length of my videos is between 3 and 5 minutes. Anything under that usually does okay, but people tend to skip out. And anything longer than that, I have to work a lot harder to keep people's attention. And that's another great thing about YouTube, is that if you can master YouTube, you become a master of commanding people's attention, which is imperative in this digital age. And there are tricks you can use to keep people's attention. But what I have found is that most of my videos, and for the most part, most of them are between 3 to 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple that are a little bit longer, and I've done some interviews. But when I'm in the 3 to 5 minute mark, and when I've got good metadata, when I've got good content, I've got good scripting, those videos tend to do very well.
Mm. Yeah, well, that kind of screws us with these long form interviews. They're about 40 minutes. But I mean, and it's funny because I have thought I should just go back through my videos and chunk them out. But again, it's like the to-do list kind of thing. But you're right. I mean, actually, the interviews, people do tend to drop off after about 11 minutes. So mm-hmm. maybe it's just a function of, you know, how long the original video is in general. But certainly very interesting to think about. And then for fiction, I guess you really do just want short stuff.
Yeah, I would keep the fiction videos pretty short. You know, a minute tops. If you're going to be talking about your book, fiction writers do tend to have that propensity to talk a little bit more than you probably should. So keep it short, because readers are going to have that short attention span. But a minute, maybe 2 minutes, you know, would be a good length for a video of that kind.
Yeah. That's super interesting. Now, the other thing that's happened, and I just wanted to ask your opinion on this, is the YouTube Red, which I think is that YouTube without adverts? It's like a premium thing?
Yeah, YouTube without adverts. I think you get access to music as well, and you also get access to special content that creators are making specifically for YouTube. What I found about YouTube Red, and I think it's interesting, I think there's YouTube, and then there's YouTube Red off in a pasture somewhere. You don't come into contact with it that much. I think that the creators that are making YouTube Red content have their fans and have their audiences. It's invite only. So I could go on and knock on their YouTube door and make Red content today. But I definitely have noticed that when people are watching content, YouTube will have different pay rates based on if someone is a Red subscriber or if they're coming off of a Red video. So I have noticed the payment is a little bit different from that. But long form content, it's definitely growing. If you're thinking about starting a YouTube channel, though, I would just focus on the tried and true YouTube techniques for now.
Yeah. And another question, do people, because I have people who consume the podcast just on YouTube. And so I presume, I mean, they're not sitting there looking, watching our talking heads. and in fact, people who are now listening on YouTube, please add a comment to this video about how you're actually consuming it, because I would assume people are putting it on in the background, or they are actually having it on their phone and they're listening, the video's playing, but they're just listening anyway, because you wouldn't sit here and watch you and I talk for necessarily. I mean, maybe you just have it on while you're doing something else. So how do people consume, I mean, obviously how to do this video would be one thing, but do you think people are actually just listening to videos like this?
I think there's a mixture of both. I do think for the longer form interviews, I do think people have those on in the background. I think for the shorter videos, where, because all my videos are talking heads, so I think a lot of people probably watch that, and I try to put humor in it, and I try to, you know, make it interesting on the videos. But I think it depends on where you're watching. So half of my subscribers watch via mobile, which is great. So I know that they're watching on their iPhones, their Windows phones, their Androids. And then the other half are watching on desktops. And YouTube is interesting because it gives you an interesting data point called the retention rate. Mm. And that basically is, on average, how long people are watching your videos. So, for example, if you have a retention rate of 50%, YouTube is telling you that people are watching your video 50% before they go elsewhere. So if they are clicking out away from your video, that could affect your retention rate as well. So, it's weird. I haven't really polled my audience to ask them how they're watching my videos. Maybe I'll do a video on that.
Yeah.
How do you watch videos?
It is really interesting. Well, like when I was just researching you and I put some of your videos on, I had them on when I was looking at your website at the same time. I wasn't actually watching your video, but you know, there's your nice voice, because you've got a lovely voice,
you
know, in the background. No, it's very relaxing. So I could talk to you forever, because there's so many things I want to ask for, but I want to ask you three specific things. Okay. One, how important is a schedule or a schedule, however you Americans say it, and posting things on specific days.
Very important. You want to train your audience to know when you're going to create content. So I do videos every Thursday, every Friday, and every Saturday. And I usually launch my videos very early in the morning, usually right when I wake up, or I'll do it the night before I go to bed. So people know when they're going to have my content. And I've had people say, oh, yeah, I know when I wake up on Friday mornings or Saturday mornings, I have one of your videos to rely on. So you definitely want to have a consistent production schedule. I record my videos kind of like you do your podcast out in advance. So at any given time, I'm usually 2 or 3 weeks ahead of where I'm currently at. So very critical. And if you're not going to be consistent, starting a channel, you probably don't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have incredibly slow growth, as I have done. But once I moved to a weekly show for the podcast, it made a huge difference. So now, as you said, about a couple of months ago, we now have started posting the YouTube videos on a Thursday. So the podcast viewers on YouTube get the episode on the Thursday before the Monday when the main show goes out. And it has made a real difference. So I would echo that too. So two more questions. The next one is the call to action. Now, I'm useless about this. What is the call to action on the video, and what are some examples?
Yeah, a call to action is just essentially you telling readers or viewers what to do next. So I guess I can talk about my general video structure, and I can talk about how my call to action fits in on that. So my videos have a very strict or rigid format. First, I tell you what I'm going to teach you and why it's important. Then I teach you the content. Then I review the content and why it was important. And then I tell you what to do next. So my call to action, and I've experimented with my calls to actions, but the ones that people talk about a lot are, and I can kind of describe it, is I'm in the top left corner of the screen and I'm saying, hey, thanks for watching. I'd love to have you subscribe. And I tell you what to expect on the channel, that I do new videos every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then below me is a link, you know, with the big picture that goes to a landing page on my site that says, get your questions answered, or subscribe to my Patreon channel. It depends on the video. And then on the right, I have three video samples that are playing in real time of videos that I have on my channel that are some of my more popular content. And it's kind of me doing some funny things. So you can kind of catch your attention and you can click right on those videos and those will take you to the next video so you can keep watching. So I'm telling you what to do. You can see me tell you what to do. And then you can see the benefit of what you're going to get when you're on the channel and you're a subscriber. So it's kind of hard to describe in audio, but you can watch my video on KDP Select, anyone who's watching, and that has this particular call to action at the end of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I mean, it's the same as when you do your book description and you write, you know, if you like this type of book, click to sample or buy now, because you have to tell people to click. It's like, so you have to tell people to subscribe, we've just started using the cards. So for people who aren't on YouTube, you won't know what they are, but they're like things that can pop out and can be a link to your website. So I'm trying to drive people to the Author 2.0 blueprint. And in that way, that's kind of the call to action. So I think that's something really important that, again, I failed miserably at and I'm trying to get better at. So we all have to learn, don't we?
Yeah, and YouTube gives you those tools to help with your audience engagement. And there's the YouTube cards, there's annotations you can use, there are all kinds of tricks that you can build into your scripts even. Like I know, for example, that my videos, after the 1 minute mark, there is a little bit of a dip. So when I use the humor in my videos, it's ironically around the 1 minute mark.
1 minute.
It's around the 1 minute mark to keep people watching. So yeah, it's great. It's amazing for that.
Which is interesting, because if you then take this as a fiction novel, the movement, or the story grid, I guess, as Sean Coyne would call it, that's actually what we're doing in a book as well. Like in a thriller, I have to have rising action and then you have to have a break and then you have to have rising action and then a break. Planning the videos in the same way is pretty similar, isn't it? You kind of have to keep people's attention over time. And it's quite different to the audio podcast, where like I consume a lot of podcasts and I'm always just doing other things. So it's quite a different format, I suppose.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to think about it as much when you're doing audio, but when you're doing video, you really have to be conscious of what people are doing when they're watching your video and know that they're going to have those short attention spans. So that's helpful. It that kind of skill translates into other areas of your business, email marketing, for example, social media, and being able to command people's attention on YouTube. It's a transferable skill.
It is. Hardcore. Good stuff. And now I've got an extra question. okay, so I want to ask, first of all, monetization. I mean, Google AdSense, which is essentially what you get with YouTube, right? Paid advertising clicks. I can tell people that it's tiny, 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 unless you have gazillions of views. So almost that monetization from ads is kind of pointless up to a certain point. So what are the ways that people can monetize YouTube?
Yeah, that's a great question. And for a lot of people, it's a great big question mark. There is the AdSense and AdWords that you had mentioned. It is very tiny. I can completely echo that and agree with it. You're not going to get rich off of YouTube ads. It's just not going to happen. But there are other things you can do to help you supplement that. So I talk about a lot of products and services in my videos, and there are products and services that I recommend. So I use affiliate links for those. Mm-hmm. And those can help you supplement your income as well. And combined with that, as your channel starts to grow and scale, you'll find that your income from both of those will increase. So that's a good way to do it. But another way to think about YouTube is really as a driver of traffic to your site. So you always want to be mentioning your website. You always want to be mentioning what the benefit of joining your list is, because YouTube is really good at that. It's good at driving channel traffic to your landing pages so that people can get on your list. And that translates into money down the long run. So that's a way I would think about it. And then another way to talk about video monetizing, and this isn't necessarily a YouTube tip, but it's a Facebook video tip. And that is, you can use video for paid advertising. So YouTube does have a paid marketing department or feature where you can put your videos in front of other people's videos, but it's quite expensive and not as intuitive as Facebook's. But Facebook is a great way to monetize your videos as well, because you can pay for those. And if you do your job right, you can get a return. So that's something I look to be doing in the near future.
Yeah. And just on affiliate links, so are you putting those on the screen, like as a URL, or are you including those in your show notes? And are you allowed to use any affiliate links?
Yeah, you're allowed to use affiliate links on YouTube. You have to follow the rules, at least here in the United States. The FTC is kind of strict about some of that. So you just want to make sure you're disclosing that it's an affiliate link, and that you get a kickback or a commission if someone does buy the product, and thank them for doing that. And then in the video description, when you list the link, what I do as a courtesy is, after the link, I just put in brackets affiliate link. That way you're clean. And I've never heard of anyone having any issues with the affiliate links.
Okay. And then I'm going to have you back on the show because I have so many questions. But what about cross-posting? So I make, at the moment, I don't put these videos on the blog. I used to, but then the iTunes feed kind of screwed them up. So I don't put these videos on. But other videos, I would embed the video on my blog at The Creative Pen and maybe include show notes underneath it. So the video could be consumed on YouTube, or the people who have subscribed to the blog will get it in their feed as a blog post. So how do you think that every video should have like a page on your blog, or, you know, should you be doing that kind of cross posting across to other sites? Or, for example, people are saying now that putting native videos within Facebook is better than embedding a YouTube link. So how do you do that sort of cross platform video?
Sure. I don't blog just because it's just not my personal preference style. So if you did have a blog, I would recommend that you do that, that you cross post, because you're going to have people who may not want to go to YouTube to watch your videos. They may prefer to read a blog while they're sitting on the bus or while they're at the grocery store, or they may have other preferences. So yeah, I would recommend uploading videos natively to YouTube. I also upload natively to Facebook, just because Facebook's really nice, because you can upload it and then you can schedule it, which YouTube doesn't allow you to do. So you can schedule your video to go live whenever you want. And yeah, it'll help you with the algorithms. But that's also true of cross-posting it on social media. So wherever you're active, you want to make sure that you're having links to your videos and that your posts are appropriate to that social media platform using hashtags or whatever it might be to get people to click through. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. No, and I agree. Just on the scheduling, I do have scheduling on my YouTube channel. So I don't know whether that's because I'm now, whatever I am, not a partner, but some kind of next YouTube step. But I certainly schedule all my YouTube videos as well.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll have to talk to you about that because that would be a heaven send for me to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's really good. So I, we're recording this in advance. And then what I do is I schedule the videos to go out on the Thursday. Sometimes I'll have 5 or 6 videos scheduled in advance. So you can definitely do that on YouTube. And you can, you know, things definitely changed when I moved into this other bracket and I can't remember what it's called. There are lots of options, but scheduling in general is so useful. We're going to stop there and there'll be loads of questions that I'll have to come back to you on. But where can people find you and your books and your videos and everything online?
Yeah, well, you can find my fiction at www.michaelloran.com. You can find out about all my books there. For the stuff we've talked about on the podcast interview and my videos, you can go to Author Level Up. So that's www.authorlevelup.com. All my videos are synced with the YouTube channel, so you can watch the videos right there on the website and subscribe there as well on YouTube.
Fantastic.
And I'll include a packet or a PDF that has links to all the stuff that we talked about in the show, because I know I dropped a lot of apps and links and things like that.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay then, Michael, that was great. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Joanna. It's been great to be here.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.